Everybody here today? Working on getting this on. I'll talk a little. You know, you never really have a good placement for these. You know, you got like maybe a tie, but you like to go high, low. You gotta make sure it's on. I have no idea. Oh, there it is. That's on. Okay. All right. Pocket to put it in. But the good thing is that regardless of whether the technology works or not, we all gather here for one great purpose, right? Whether things seem to be up or down, you know, we just had a trauma kind of experience from the Boston bombings and the Texas plant and a bunch of the local things that went on, and, you know, we still have a lot of, you know, hearing about that. Isn't it great to know that God's the same God? And He's the same God from the beginning of time to now. But yet, sometimes I hear, you know, the God is a different God. They're like, if you read the Old Testament, He's an angry God. All He does is strike down people, take over other nations, destroy villages of both male, female, and children. And how He's just so violent, and how everything He does is just so He can make these one nation grow. Well, I have a different story. I think I've read the Bible a little bit different than what they have. And I see in the Old Testament, actually, the same God as we see today as a very loving God. Yes, He is still a God of war. And He is a jealous God. And yes, we can't make Him angry. But I do see that He has that loving side, even through the Genesis and some of the Old Testaments that He's got. So just a couple of them that I want to look through. It sounds like a lot, but it's probably not too bad. But it's Genesis chapter 3 through chapter 11. Okay, it's kind of a very, very big span. But each story that I'm going to go and talk about all have the same points. They all show God's love, even though they had some pretty trying times. Okay, so first one that we're going to look at is Adam and Eve. Okay, we know that God created male, and that He created the female from the rib of this male named Adam, and her name was Eve. And we know that they had everything wonderful there. It was the best place ever. Okay, it was very good. Everything that was there was amazing. They only had one thing to do. And, you know, to me, I have two jobs. I have a family. I have a yard that likes to grow much bigger. Seems like every time I cut it, it's like the hair, you know, they say the trim hair, it grows longer. I think my grass does the same thing. I turn around and it's grown up the next day, and I'm like, I just cut it. But the good thing is if they just had one thing to do, and they kind of dropped the ball on it, all they had to do was just be fruitful, multiply, live there, but they could not eat from this one tree, which, oddly enough, everybody seems to continue to go for that idea. Everybody wants to be smarter. Everybody wants to have more wisdom. Well, that's kind of what got us here in the first place, was the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So, you know, I think that's why Paul eventually comes back and says, you know, I much rather be, you know, in the idea of knowing nothing but Christ crucified and Him risen. You know, and I think that that's an amazing idea. So, as we look at Adam and Eve and realize that they only had one thing to do, maybe we can make our lives a little bit simpler by being in the same idea as Paul. But we can also see God's evidence through this, okay? So, all these are going to have the same patterns. So you'll probably hear me saying it over and over, but it's just to help keep everything on the same page. But this pattern will be sin or the offense, okay? We see that, obviously, as they're going, Satan tempts both, truly, to eat of this knowledge of good and evil. And we know that eating of this fruit caused us to be not only, you know, death eventually and to be kicked out of the garden, but we also know that it was a sin which separates us from God. So through that we can see just the first pattern of Adam and Eve is that they ate of the fruit, and that was against God. That was something He told us not to do, and we ended up doing it. Then after, you know, they realized what's going on, their eyes were open to this knowledge of good and evil. They went to go hide. All right, now, I've played hide and go seek as a kid. I know that I'm a pretty good hider, believe it or not, of even my size. In fact, given camouflage, I don't think you could ever find one. My brother and his friend, when we were playing airsoft, which is like paintball, with plastic BBs that don't shoot hardly as fast as some of the other ones, they would always come to try to find me. They enjoyed the search. I enjoyed hiding. I was very good at it. I would lay down and all kinds of brush, and they would walk by me probably 3 or 4 times before I actually would let them know that I was there. I mean, I had several opportunities and, you know, to shoot them with the aerosol gun as they passed by, but I didn't, because I just wanted to see how long it took them to find me. And it was kind of a thrill for me. Eventually, yes, I let them know, and they were very shocked and scared, because I've climbed the many trees that they didn't think I could climb. I've hit in many different kind of areas that I probably shouldn't have, because there were probably snakes all beside me. But the good part is I enjoyed that. Now, in this case, however, with Adam and Eve, it was more out of shame. It wasn't something that they were doing as exciting. They were hiding because they found out that they were naked. At the time, nobody knew the difference. It was a sense of innocence there. And then when the knowledge of good and evil was let upon them, they realized that they were naked, so they went to go hide. Well, we can see God coming into the picture, and this is what I call the investigation. And he goes, "Where are you?" Now, obviously, God knew where they were. I would probably fail miserably every time I would ever play aerosol with God, because he knows exactly where I am, and he knows how many bullets I have, and I have no idea either sometimes. So playing against God, that wouldn't be easy nor fun, because he would know exactly where I am at all times, which is great for me, you know, thinking spiritually, but as far as the game goes, it'd be miserable. But we can see that he's asking, "Where are you?" And you know, they finally came out, and they're like, "Oh, here I am," you know. And he goes, "Okay, well, what's going on? And why are you hiding?" And he's like, "Well, we ate the fruit." And you can just tell, you know, that there was some kind of like letdown there, obviously, because he knew he did wrong. And God, you know, obviously, he was making sure that everything was, you know, he was asked, "Where you are, you know, did you eat the fruit?" And, you know, and then he's like, "Well, you know, who told you that you were naked?" You know, all this investigation going on, okay? Finally, we get to see that, you know, he talks about, you know, "Well, it was the woman that you gave me," and the woman was like, "Well, it was the serpent that was cunning and conniving." And we can see throughout all this, you know, God is being the investigator. He's seeing what's going on. Well, as most people find out, and it seems to be, as we said in class today, it's slightly and sadly becoming less and less, but most children who do something bad, hopefully, will get punished for it. Not that I want them to be in pain, or that I think it's fun to spank a child by any means, but for their own good, so that they know that they did something wrong. You know, when I was wrestling with my dad when I was little, okay, it's really a David and Goliath kind of deal, right? Y'all see my dad, you know that he's pretty much a miniature bodybuilder. He's got a weak spot now that his back is thrown out, but I didn't have that at the time, nor would I probably have used it, but all I know is that when we would wrestle, there were several different times that I would, you know, not knowing, hit him in the places that I should not have hit him. And I quickly found out that these were not places that you go to attack someone unless your life is in danger. Okay? So, as far as that goes, I learned, obviously, very quickly that is a boundary. That you don't do that. You don't go to those places. Also, throughout life, I found out that, you know, obviously there were a couple things you were not supposed to go to. Certain parties. You know, there was always a couple parties that you would hear, even at Good Pasture, okay? It's not like they're not, you're safe. Just because you go to a Christian place does not mean that you can't find evil of some sort there, okay? But the good thing is hopefully you can find somebody with some more selection of friends that might be hopefully in the same view as you, that you can actually find someone and connect and realize some kind of camaraderie with a Christian brother or sister, right? So don't be shocked that as a Christian school goer, there were such parties. But I knew that they existed, and I did not want to go, luckily. Because I knew that, first of all, my parents would have disapproved, and you don't want to make them mad. Okay? I knew that they were the very wrong thing. But through all these different learnings, I found out, obviously, that I was not supposed to be doing these things, and that there was boundaries and consequences to what I did. Whether it was good or bad, there would be consequences. Alright? Well, that's the next thing that comes around. After we had the sin and offense happen, okay, then we see the investigation going on. Now we have the punishment. Okay? Well, because they did what they did, he told the serpent that he would crawl on his belly for the rest of his life, and that the man and woman would both, you know, the man would go to crush his head, and the woman would be fearful, and obviously get the guy and say, hey, go kill that, which, in my case, it would be a shotgun, because I'm not getting near a snake. And then you see that the man, you know, he had to work with the sweat of his brow. The ground was cursed. That's the first time it's cursed. So it's obviously extremely hard to build. I mean, to dig and other things as far as the cursed ground goes. And then you see that the woman is greatly intensified in the pain of childbirth. And there's a desire to be, you know, under the leadership of the man. So, that's the punishment. Also, they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Also, death would eventually come. Because God never said that surely you will die as soon as you possibly eat it, directly right then. It was more of, it was a sure thing that if you did, you would eventually die. Yes. So, eventually that does come. Also, now that we got the punishment and we know what's going on there, this is what I call the surprising grace. This is the whole part of why I like seeing God in the Old Testament and believe so strongly that He is still the same God as He is now. Like we read about in the New Testament, the giving of His own Son. All this stuff that we is built upon this for me in this lesson. Because we can see the surprising grace. Okay, so their issue now is that they're naked. Okay, they obviously got, they're punished, they've been kicked out. But the interesting part is God doesn't just leave it there. Okay? Even though He gives the consequences and the punishment of their wrongdoings, He makes clothing for them. Okay? Like, they, you know, you always see in your mind, I guess, or on TV shows or whatever, they got little fig leaves and stuff. God actually fashioned clothing for them to wear. Okay? I don't know if you get that. And then He still talks to them. You know, it might not be exactly as it was in the garden, you know, directly one-on-one and being able to see one another, but He still continues to talk. And that gets me to my next point. And we can see that through Cain and Abel. Okay, their children. Okay, Cain and Abel, they're both brothers. I happen to have a brother. He's still alive, so obviously it didn't go the same round as Cain and Abel. But we see the same pattern. Okay? We see that the sin that Cain kills Abel. Okay? Cain was very jealous of Abel's sacrifice. In fact, God even warns Cain ahead of time. He says, look, sin is knocking at your door. He said, you have a choice. If you follow this, things are going to happen. And there are going to be bad consequences. However, if you don't, obviously, the story would have been different. However, Cain goes into temptation, kills his brother Abel. And God comes to him in investigation and says, where's your brother? Where's your brother Abel? And he goes, oh, am I my brother's keeper? Well, kind of. You know, and you hear, he said, well, even now, his blood cries out to me. And you realize that God already knew the answer. Okay? Even though he asked it, he gave them a chance to come clean. Okay? Well, as punishment, he makes him wonder. Okay? Continuously. There's really no spot that he can find that would be worthy of his area, so he's always going somewhere else. And then, the ground is cursed again. Okay, this is the second time. So it's bad enough already. But now it's cursed a second time, which happened to be Cain's livelihood. Okay, that was what he ended up, you know, his was like carpet, like gardening. That was his expertise. And obviously now it's extremely hard for him to do any, even the thing that he used to do something really well with. Well, the interesting part, once again, is the surprising grace. Okay, he's nervous now. He's like, okay, well, obviously people are going to find out that I killed my brother. And they're going to try to do something to me. And obviously, you know, I'm fearful for my own life. Well, God goes, I got you covered. I'm going to give you a protective mark. And if anybody wants to do anything to you, it's going to happen seven times more to them. So, even though he probably deserves, you know, what other people would do to him, God, on the other hand, decided to give him a protective mark. So he didn't leave him just, you know, out there wandering around, wondering at every second of, am I going to die? So, then we skip forward a little bit, and we go to the flood, okay, and all that, and what happens then. Now, the sin offense was is that we found that the earth was sinful. In fact, they were so sinful that every thought was pretty evil. That's the only thing they ever could think of was something evil. Except for one man. And we see that God saw Noah. And I believe that was in chapter 6, around verse 12. So we see that he sees Noah. And that he's like, okay, I still have a hope for this world, this earth, to continue. So in the investigation, he sees that Noah is a righteous man and that he still follows God. And as Rich also pointed out today, that he taught for 100 years while building the Noah's, his own ark. Okay? And we see that because he had to build the ark, because God obviously told him to do such, that a punishment was coming. And obviously it took 100 years from when Noah knew that the world was going to end and that it was going to be destroyed. And he was trying to tell everybody. But even then, nobody would come and listen. They didn't believe that that was going to be, you know, the case. So, you know, sometimes I've heard, well, Jared, you know, if we just do what we believe in our heart, then we're good, right? We're good. And I'm like, well, there's several instances in the Bible that people who did what they thought was right and was wrong. One of these would be, obviously, the way of man's heart. They were so pure and evil that obviously they, you know, were going that route, and that was wrong. You also see the guy that is going right behind the Ark of the Covenant. You know, it's on the wagon because they're not doing it the way God told them to, by carrying it on poles or on their shoulders. And it falls over and he goes to touch it to stop it from falling over. Well, all of a sudden, he gets struck down. Alright, well, sometimes what we think is right isn't always right. Alright, and the ways of man isn't always perfect in accordance with God. But the way with God and his will is perfect. So as long as we're in that, we're good. But we can see, you know, that Noah's trying to tell everybody. He's like, look, this flood's coming, I'm giving you a warning. Okay? And nobody believed him. Well, at this point, the boat has been built. And it starts to rain, which, as far as I know, is the first appearance of rain. And it starts to flood. And people, you know, I'm sure were banging up Noah's Ark, trying to say, let us in, let us in. You know, I can only imagine, because they knew that he was building this huge thing. I mean, it's roughly 4 football fields long, okay? So it's not something like you could put in your basement, you know? Something you can hide. So obviously people knew what he was doing, and they went to the boat, would be my guess. And that was probably something, that first couple of days were probably the worst days for him, I would assume. But as the waters were going up, God flooded the whole world. Alright, that was the punishment, because they were so evil, he decided to pretty much just wipe out the whole earth. So for Noah and his family. Okay? Well, the surprising grace obviously was Noah and his family. Okay? He did not completely destroy every little thing. Because it had Noah and his family, it had, you know, 2 of every kind of creature, and then, you know, obviously, you know, as you go along, I don't think the fish obviously needed any help with that, because they were good. But as far as every kind of land animal, and obviously Noah and his family were saved. Okay? So there's a little bit of surprising grace. Also now, for those that are, you know, still talking about, like, I don't even know you from Adam, but about the first man, you can now say, I don't even know you from Noah. Okay? You can go that route. Make it a little bit closer. Okay. Moving on. The next little thing that we come to towards the end, around chapter 10, is we get the Tower of Babel. And as the Tower of Babel, using these same patterns, we can see that God continues to be the same God in every investigation, like, wait. We see that the Tower of Babel, there was a lot of pride, okay? This was their sin, because they were very prideful, and They weren't filling the earth, which is what God said. He said, go out and spread and multitudes and, fill the earth. Well, they all decided to get in one location, build this huge tower. And because the name of it is called the Tower of Babel, I'm sure you're going to kind of figure out what I'm going towards. But they build this huge tower and trying to get to reach heaven. Okay? And it was definitely a prideful thing. Well, the Lord comes down and investigates what's going on. He actually goes to see what the city's doing, since they're all gathered. He's wanting to check it out. Not that he did not already know, but he still continued to go and definitely describes it in the Bible that he went down to see. Well, the next thing you see is that we come back to another punishment. Because they weren't doing what they were supposed to, he confused their language, which is where we get the Tower of Babel. And he confused their language so much that they ended up going into their own little rooms. Right? If I was the only one to speak Spanish in here, y'all would all be looking at me very confused, because not everybody in here probably also speaks Spanish. Okay? I, on the other hand, know exactly what I'm saying. Y'all would just look at me like, what is he talking about? So, obviously, if there was some, this group over here, if y'all were all England and France, y'all would have kind of the idea of most language, together. Now, if you had Africa and then, Australia, sometimes it gets a little confusing on language, and nobody would be able to understand one another. So you would stay in your own groups, and then you would spread out because you would want to pretty much stay around the same people that you would have in common with the language. In fact, that's what most people do. Your friends, usually it's because you have something in common. That's usually where, you find out. You don't, oh man, I don't know anything about that guy. Actually, we have nothing in common, so I'm going to be making my best friend. Not always exactly how it happens. It's usually you stick with somebody in common. So, when God did this, it was actually able to spread everybody out. Well, then the surprising grace comes a little bit right after the Tower of Babel. In fact, it ends it up, I believe, in chapter 11, talking about Abraham. Okay? So now that everybody's scattered and going into the world as God originally planned at this point, he talks about Abraham. Abram, to be more exact at this point. But Abram was a man of God. You can see by his life that he was not exactly 100% always perfect, which is great for us because we can realize that, even though we might think of him as a perfect person, he was not, and we can aspire to be just like him and be faithful in the same regards he was. But we can see that through Abraham that there was a couple promises. One is that, that he'd be a great nation, like the sea, the sands of the sea and the stars of the sky, countless many generations after him, which is surprising if you know the story, because he was quite an old man at the time that he had children, roughly around 100 years old. So we can see that was quite a feat for him and his wife, that is. But eventually it comes, and now he goes down all the way down to David. Finally, get past David, down all the way down to finally Jesus, who comes through that same line, which was the second type of promise, which was is that they would be blessed, the nations would be blessed through his seed. So you have Jesus now, which is the biggest surprising grace. I mean, if I was to write, and I've tried before, to be honest, when I went to Austin Peay, there was a couple guys that I got together, and we decided we were going to make a comic book that would be basically our way of spreading God's gospel. It was going to be talking about all this different stuff with new technology and how, there was these good guys that everybody wanted to be, but they were considered the rebels. By everybody else's opinion, they were the evilest kind of people, and they were always causing trouble and stuff, but yet they were actually the good guys, and how, that kind of goes on. Well, our biggest thing is how to get the idea during our situations to have Christ. Who would he be? Well, we named him Joshua Shepherd for those that were just in the good side, the rebel side. But they always called him Thief, because we came up with the idea because Jesus came as a thief in the night. So thus, he was the thief, which gives the whole idea that we were going towards. But we're like, well, get this thief to show the love and give his ultimate sacrifice of his life and yet still be able to come back and, you know, well, boy, we came through so many scenarios and we're like, well, maybe he could jump on a bomb that's going to take out everybody. And, you know, we were trying to come up with all these different things. And of course, he was fighting his arch enemy, which was Lucius Wolf, which, you know, you can kind of get some ideas from there, Lucifer and the wolf. But everybody called him Angel because he was the angel of light. That's what he disguised himself as. So you have all these kind of, you know, scenarios going on. It was very complex, and we tried to go real deep in it. But the hardest part was is trying to come up with some idea of some kind of surprising grace. That was the hardest deal. In fact, I don't think we ever got done with it because we had to stop there. We had the whole book planned out, but we could not figure out how to get this surprising grace. So if you were to ask me to write the Bible, I don't think I could nearly come anywhere close to how amazing it actually is. And then what's greater is it's not just a story. You know, you always hear it growing up, you know, oh, this is the story of David, and this is the story of how his life went. And it's kind of like a make-believe fairy tale kind of feel sometimes. But they were true stories. It's real happenings. It's like writing your own story of your own life. It's a very true thing that happened. Okay? If you look at the Bible, you would realize that it gives so much detail. Okay? If I was going to write a story and wanted people to believe it, but I didn't want them to know if it was true or not because I was afraid that, you know, if they were to find out that it wasn't true, then I would be very nervous. And so when I'm going to write it, I want to put people's names in it. If I was writing this story now, I wouldn't put any of y'all's names in it. I would make it up, y'all's names, so you wouldn't know if I was writing about Echo Hills or not. The interesting part is the Bible writes the names that were there. There were details. You know, there was a time that they talked about the tunnels under Jerusalem. Well, for the longest time, they were saying, oh, there's no such thing. Well, guess what? About a couple of years later, after they supposedly completely proved that there was not, they found some tunnels. You know, it's always interesting how that happens. So they always say, well, oh, obviously God's wrong about this. And just a little bit later, it comes out to be that God was right. You know, it's always an interesting fact to me. But as you can see, the surprising grace is Jesus. All right? Yeah, there's several times that you can see God being in the example of helping clothe him. He gave him a protective mark. You know, obviously he kept Noah and his family and some animals. But the biggest thing for us and our surprising grace that is continued through, okay, is each one was individually sectioned off. You had the clothing, that was one event. You had the protective mark, that was a particular event. You had Noah and his family, that was a particular event. But the surprising grace of Jesus is for all. It goes all the way to the back, which is where Adam and Eve were, all the way to today. And one of the things that I like to tell the kids when I'm not teaching at a good pastor, I'm like, how long did it take God to create the world? Of course, they're usually like seven. And I'm like, whoa, let's think about this. And they're like, oh, six, because he rested on seven. I'm like, that's right. But if you took this world, which we know, and, you know, it's kind of a big place. You know, obviously it's very bigger than, if you've never left really out of Tennessee, you are missing a big percentage of the world. But if you look at the world and you actually like it, right? Just imagine, that was 6 days that God created the world. Okay, 6 days. Now, as Jesus is about to ascend, and he's telling the disciples, you know, to go out and preach the gospel and all this great stuff, he tells them, he said, if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come back for you when it's done. Well, I don't know if you know, but that's been roughly around 2,000 years ago. Okay? So you see this world has 6 days. Okay? But he's been preparing this place that he's got for us for 2,000 plus years. I'm thinking heaven is going to be so much better than anything we could ever imagine. Because all we can imagine is a 6 day creation versus a 2,000 plus creation. So, where you put your alliance is where it's going to matter. Because if you go inside with the devil, obviously there shouldn't be consequences. But if you put your alliance with God, obviously there shouldn't be consequences, but of the good sort. So as we can see the Old Testament, we can see that God is not only a God of a loving nature, but he continues, even though he punishes us for our wrongdoings, he continues to go and walk with us. He continues, as long as we try to stay in him and try to do what he actually says, he helps us because we need him. Without him, we are nothing. We can look at tons of other examples. These were just the ones that I wanted to pull out. But throughout all of the Bible, you can see that it's all based upon him and his giving. But it's because of him and his love to us that we even have a chance. Because without him, we are nothing at all. Rich was talking about today. He has been blessed, so I always like to refer back to it. But he's always talking about, how Jesus loves me, the song that we're talking about. Jesus loves me. And how it's all based off of a self kind of view. And how America is based off of a self kind of view. And when we get to that point, we can see that Jesus loves me. It's all self-directed. But it's really, Jesus loves us. Okay? He loves all of us. And it's not just a one kind of person kind of deal. In fact, if it wasn't for his love, it wouldn't matter. If Jesus didn't come and die on that cross for us, we'd still be trying to figure out somehow to get back with God. We would still be struggling trying to figure out what he would want from us. But because he gave his son, and the love that he had for us, we have a chance now. We actually have an understanding of what the surprising grace is. We have a chance to make our lives different. So we can spend this time in this amazing place called heaven that's been going on for 200 plus years that he's gone to prepare for us a place. And he says if he goes, he will come back for us. But how do you know, Jared? How do you know when he's going to come back? And how do you know if you're, how to be one of the chosen ones, so to say? How do you know he's going to choose you? Well, part of that is putting them on to baptism. It talks about it all kinds of different places, how they had faith. But it even says even the demons believed. Okay? So obviously there's something more than just that. Well, what else can we do if we just believe? Well, it talks about works. What happens if we work real hard? Well, faith without works is dead and vice versa. We see that on many different occasions. Okay, well, what else? What are we able to do? The thing is, we aren't really able to do anything. The thing is that Jesus does it all. Through Jesus' blood, we are covered, and we put on Christ. So when God sees us on Judgment Day, he sees his Son. That's why we are able to be called the sons and daughters of God, because God sees his own. He sees his own people. And because of that, and through baptism, we're able to show that to God, and that we are part of his family. So if there's anybody here that wants to be in an amazing place for the next, eternity, that's been being built for 2,000 plus years, then come join us as we stand to sing.
I stand to praise you.